Chapter 3. Striding through the shredded carcasses of the lair, Marius Verosian watched impassively as the warriors of Third Company gathered up their dead and wounded as they prepared to continue their advance. His stern face was lined with displeasure, though at who or what he couldn't say, for his men had fought as bravely as he would expect them to, and Lord Fulgrim's plan had been followed to the letter. With the landing zones and objectives secured, all that remained was to link his forces with those of Solomon Demeter's second company, and Atoll 19 would be theirs. The cost of winning this victory had been damnably high. 9 of his warriors would never fight again, their gene seed harvested by Apothecary Fabius, and many others would require extensive augmetic surgery upon their return to the fleet. The flaring pillar of energy that had been their objective was secure, and he had split a detachment to hold it while they sought out Solomon's warriors, a hunt that might prove easier said than done. Explosions, gunfire, and the blaring howls of the towers echoed strangely through the twisting coral streets of Atoll 19, and with the Vox network scrambled, it was difficult to pinpoint exactly where the fighting was coming from.
"Solomon," he said into the vox bead at his throat. "Solomon, can you hear me?"
Crackling static was his only answer, and he swore silently to himself. It would be just like Solomon Demeter to have removed his helmet in the heat of battle to better experience the sensations of combat. Marius shook his head. What manner of fool would go into a firefight without all the protection he could muster? The sounds of battle seemed to be coming from the west, though how to get there was going to be problematic, as the streets, if they could even be called that, snaked through the atoll in meandering paths that might take them kilometres out of their way. The idea of setting off without a detailed plan rankled at Marius, a warrior for whom each advance and manoeuvre was planned with meticulous perfection and enacted without deviation. Julius Caesaron had once joked that he should have been selected to join the Ultramarines, meaning it as a friendly jibe, but Marius had taken it as a compliment. The Emperor's children strove for perfection in all things, and Marius Verosian prized this striving above all things. The idea of not being the best made him feel physically sick. To be less than the best was unacceptable, and Marius had long ago decided that nothing was going to stop him from achieving his goal.
"Third Company," he shouted, "move out on me."
Instantly his warriors were ready to move and formed up on him with parade ground precision, their weapons held at the ready. Marius led his men off with a ground-eating stride that Astartes' warriors could maintain for days on end and still be ready to fight at the end of it. The glistening coral walls of the city twisted and turned, fragments of crystal and stone crunching under their armoured boots as they made their way through the city. Marius kept following the path he thought best led to the sounds of fighting, encountering scattered bands of lair warriors that fought with the desperation of a cornered foe. Each of these fights was easily won, for nothing could stand before the warriors of the Third on the advance and live. He kept checking the vox for any word from Solomon, but eventually gave up on his fellow captain and switched channels.
"Cafin, can you hear me? This is Verosian. Answer if you can hear me."
More static spat from the earpiece in his helmet, but it was swiftly followed by the sound of a voice, chopped and garbled, but a voice nonetheless.
"Cafin, is that you?" asked Marius.
"Yes, Captain," said Gaius Cafin, his voice surging in the earpiece as Marius turned a corner into yet another twisting street of burrows and corpses.
"Where are you?" he demanded. "We're trying to reach you, but these damn streets keep turning us around all over the place." "The main arterial route towards our objective was strongly held, so Captain Demeter sent us and Thelonious to flank their position."
"While he went up the centre, no doubt," said Marius.
"Yes, sir," said Cafin. "We shall home in on your signal, but if there's something else you can do to mark your position, then do it. Verosian out."
Marius followed the blue dot projected onto the internal surface of his visor that represented Gaius Cafin's vox signal, though it faded with each turn they took through the maze of coral.
damn this place. No, snarled Marius as the signal faded completely. He raised his hand and called a halt, but as he did so, a huge explosion erupted from nearby, and a tall, curling tower of coral collapsed in flames, not more than 30 meters to their left. That has to be it, he said, and searched for a way around the bristling lumps of coral. The streets wound away from the explosion, and he knew they would never reach Kaifan by taking any of them. He looked over at the billowing black clouds and said, We're going over. Move out. Marius scrabbled up the face of a lair burrow, easily finding hand and footholds in the gnarled coral. He pulled himself higher and higher, the ground rapidly receding beneath him as he and the warriors of the Third made their way over the roofs of Atoll 19. Ostian watched the first assault craft launch from the Pride of the Emperor with a mixture of awe and irritation. Awe, for it was a truly magnificent thing to watch the martial power of the Legion unleashed on an enemy world, and irritation because it had taken him away from the unblemished marble in his studio. First Captain Julius Caseron had sent advance word of the launch to Serena, and she had immediately come to fetch him from his studio to a prime spot on the observation deck. He'd tried to refuse, saying he was busy, but Serena had been adamant, claiming that all he was doing was sitting looking at the marble, and nothing he could say would persuade her otherwise. Now, standing before the armoured glass of the observation deck, he was heartily glad she had dragged him away.
"It's rather wonderful, don't you think?" asked Serena, glancing up from her sketchbook as her hand dashed across its surface, capturing the moment with astounding skill.
"It's amazing," agreed Ostian, staring at her profile as a second wave of ships, wreathed in the blue fire of their launch, caught the sunlight on their steel flanks. The observation deck was hundreds of metres above the launch rails, but Ostian fancied he could still feel the vibrations of their release in his bones. A final wave of stormbirds launched from the other vessels of the Emperor's children, and he turned from Serena to watch them fly, birds of prey shooting into space like great darts of fire. Caseron had said that this was to be a full-scale assault, and seeing the sheer number of craft being launched, Ostian could well believe it.
"I wonder what it would be like," said Ostian. "The entire surface of a world covered by one enormous ocean. I can barely conceive of such a thing."
"Who knows?" replied Serena, flicking a tendril of dark hair from her eyes as she continued furiously sketching.
"I imagine it would be like any other sea."
"It looks wonderful from here."
Serena gave him a sidelong glance and said,
"Did you not see 28 too?"
Ostian shook his head. "I got here just as the fleet left for Laren. This is the first world other than Terra I've seen from space."
"Then you've never seen the sea?"
"I've never seen the sea," agreed Ostian, feeling foolish for admitting such a thing.
"Oh, my dear boy," said Serena, looking up from her sketchpad, "we shall have to see about getting you down to the surface once the fighting is done."
"Do you think that would be allowed?"
"I should bloody well hope so," said Serena,
ripping the page from her sketchpad and throwing it angrily to the floor.
"A very select few of us were allowed down to the surface of 28 too, and it was a magnificent place. Snow-covered mountains, continents of forests, and lakes the colour of a summer's morning. And the sky, oh, the sky, it was a wondrous shade of cerulean blue. I think I loved it so much because it was how I imagined old Earth might once have looked. I took some pics, but they didn't really capture it. Shame, really, as I'd have loved to have been able to mix it, but I couldn't manage it."
As Serena spoke of her failure to mix the colour, Ostian saw her surreptitiously pressing the tip of her quill into the flesh of her wrist, leaving a tiny weal of ink and blood on her pale skin.
"I just couldn't get it to work," she said absently, and Ostian wished he knew how to stop Serena from hurting herself and to see the value in what she did.
"I'd like you to show me the surface of the planet, if possible," he said. She blinked and smiled at him, reaching up to press her fingertips against his cheek. Gaius Cafan ducked below the screeching attack of a Leia warrior and drove his chainsword into its guts, ripping the weapon free in a spray of blood and bone. Fire billowed around them from the shattered remains of a pair of stormbirds that lay smouldering in the ruins of a Leia burrow complex. The crew and passengers had died in the crash, and the violence of the impact had almost toppled a rearing spire of twisted coral. It had only taken a handful of grenades lobbed into the shattered base of the tower to complete its destruction and bring it thundering to the ground. Marius Verosian wanted them to mark their position, and if he couldn't see that, then they were as good as dead. He and his squad had fought through the Leia burrow complexes, as Captain Demeter had ordered, but the aliens had anticipated the flanking manoeuvre. Every burrow held a pair of monstrous alien warriors poised to slither from hiding to kill in a frenzy of flashing blades and energy bolts. The fighting had been close and brutal. No room for skill or artistry, and each screeching snake-like warrior had pounced into their midst where all that separated the living from the dead was luck. Cafan bled from a score of wounds, his breathing ragged and uneven, though he was determined not to let his captain down. Sounds of desperate fighting came from all around him, and even as he watched, more Leia warriors spat from their burrows like coiled springs, deadly bolts of energy slicing through the air towards them. Coral and fragments of armour ricocheted around him. "Squad, make ready," he shouted, as another trio of Leia appeared behind them, weapons spitting fire and light. Screams sounded from nearby, and he raised his bolter to fire on this new threat when the ground shifted violently underfoot and the entire atoll took a sickening lurch downwards. Gaius dropped to one knee, grabbing onto a nearby spur of coral as more Leia emerged from burrow holes. A spray of bolter fire from above him cut one practically in two, and it thrashed in pain as it fell. Deafening reports echoed, and the Leia that had been set to overrun them were obliterated in volleys of precisely aimed gunfire. He looked up to see where the shots had come from, and laughed in relief as he saw a host of Astartes dropping from above, the trims of their shoulder guards marking them as warriors of Marius Verosian's third company. The captain himself dropped down next to Cafan, the muzzle of his bolter flaring as he gunned down a Leia warrior that had somehow survived the initial volleys. "On your feet, Sergeant," shouted Verosian. "Which way is Captain Demeter?" Cafan pushed himself erect and pointed towards the end of the street. "That way." Verosian nodded as his warriors cut down the last of the Leia defenders with grim efficiency. "Then let's go and link up with him, as ordered," said Verosian. Cafan nodded and followed the captain of the third. Another six of his warriors were down, torn apart by the energized blades of the Leia, or with whole segments of their bodies rendered molten in the furnace heat of their ranged weapons. Solomon was beginning to regret casting off his helmet with such a cavalier disregard for communication, knowing that now, more than ever, he needed to know what was happening elsewhere on the atoll. He had seen no sign of Sergeant Thelonious or Gaius Cafan's flanking forces, and though the warriors of Goldwara had attempted to punch through to them, they were not equipped with the weapons to fight in such brutal close quarters and had been forced back by the Leia. They were on their own. Solomon drove his sword through the stretched mandibles of a Leia warrior, the blade punching out through the back of its skull, and felt himself being dragged down by its weight. He fought to withdraw the blade, but its madly whirring teeth were lodged in the dense bone of the alien's skull. A screeching cry of pleasure sounded nearby, and he dropped flat as a searing bolt of light flashed over him and gouged a furrow in the ground. Solomon rolled as the Leia slithered over the bodies of its fellows with horrifying speed and launched itself towards him. He rolled onto his back and hammered his feet into its face, feeling its mandibles snap with the impact. The alien reeled, its whipping tail thrashing on the ground, and a cry of pain gurgling from its ruined mouth. The sound of bolter fire echoed through the plaza as Solomon scrambled over the uneven ground and smashed his fist into the layer's face. The force of the blow burst one of its eyeballs and drew another screech of pain from it. His other fist slammed into its armoured chest, the blood-stained metal buckling under the assault. It spat a froth of hot blood and mucus into his face, and he roared in anger, a red mist of fury descending on him as he grabbed its glistening flesh in both hands and slammed its head into the ground. The creature kept up its keening screech, and Solomon slammed its head into the ground again and again. Even when he was sure the creature was dead, he kept pounding its skull until there was nothing left but a ragged mess of sodden skull and brain matter. He laughed with savage joy as he picked himself up from the ground, his armour covered from head to toe in the dark blood of the lair. He staggered over to the first alien he'd killed and wrenched his sword clear as the noise of bolter fire intensified. It took a moment before the fact that he and his warriors had run out of ammunition could penetrate the red fog that had engulfed him as he fought the lair. He turned to the source of the gunfire and punched the air as he saw the unmistakable form of Marius Verosian leading the warriors of the third into the plaza with merciless perfection. Gaius Cafan fought alongside him, and the lair reeled from this fresh assault, their ranks thrown into disarray as Marius's warriors cut them down. Seeing their fellows, the second redoubled their efforts, and tired limbs fought on with fresh strength. The lair attack faltered, and even though their features were utterly alien, Solomon could see the paralysis of indecision tear at them as they realized that they were surrounded. "Second, with me!" he shouted, and set off in the direction of his fellow captain. His Astartes needed no further encouragement or orders, falling in behind him to form a fighting wedge that carved through the stunned lair like a bloody knife. None of the Emperor's children were in the mood to offer mercy, and within minutes it was all over. As the last of the alien warriors was slain by the overwhelming force of Verosian's veterans, the atonal howling of the rearing coral towers finally ceased, and a blessed silence fell over the battlefield. Cries of welcome passed between the Astartes, who had survived. As Solomon sheathed his sword and bent to retrieve his bolter from the carnage of the plaza. His limbs were stiff and aching from numerous wounds he didn't remember receiving. "You went up the center again, didn't you?" asked a familiar voice as he straightened. "I did, Marius," replied Solomon, without turning around. "Are you going to tell me that was wrong?" "Maybe. I don't know yet." Solomon turned as Marius Verosian removed his helmet and shook his head to clear the momentary disorientation of returning to the employment of his own senses, as opposed to those of his Mark IV plate. His friend wore a stern expression, but then he always did, and his salt-and-pepper hair was slick with oily sweat. Unlike many of the Astartes, Marius Verosian had a narrow face, its features sharp and inquisitive, his skin dark and lined like old wood. "Well met, brother," said Solomon, reaching out and gripping his battle brother's hand. Marius nodded and said, "A hard fight by the looks of it." "Aye, it was that," agreed Solomon, wiping some blood from the fascia plates of his bolter. "They're tough bastards, these lair."
"Indeed they are," said Marius. "Maybe you should have thought of that before you went up the centre."
"If there was another way to have done it, I would have tried it, Marius. Don't think I wouldn't have. They plugged the middle and I sent men around the flanks. I couldn't have let someone else lead the attack up the centre. It had to be me."
"Luckily for you, Sergeant Cafan seems to agree with your assessment of the battle."
"He's got a good eye on him, that one," said Solomon. "He'll go far. Maybe even make captain some day."
"Maybe. Though he has the look of a line officer about him."
"We need good line officers," noted Solomon.
"Maybe so, but a line officer does not seek to better himself. He will never attain perfection by simply doing his job and no more."
"Not everyone can be captain, Marius," said Solomon. "We need warriors as well as leaders."
Men like you, Julius, and I will lead this legion to greatness. We take our strength and honour from the Primarch and the Lord Commanders, and it is up to us to pass on what we learn from them to those below us. Line officers are part of that. They take their lead from us and communicate our will to the men."
Marius stopped and placed his hand on Solomon's shoulder guard. "Even though I have known you for decades, you still have the power to surprise me, my friend. Just when I think I need to reprimand you for cavalier tactics, you give me a lesson on how it behoves us to lead our warriors."
"What can I say? Julius and his books must be having an effect on me."
"Speaking of Julius," said Marius, pointing into the sky, "it looks as if he has secured the order to commence the campaign."
Solomon looked up into the crystal sky and saw hundreds of gunships descending from the upper atmosphere.
With the capture of Atoll 19, the opening stage of the campaign had been won, though the ferocity of the fighting and the brittle knife edge upon which it had been won would never be known except by those whose words would one day be reviled. Interceptors descended alongside the gunships and circled in figure-of-eight patrol circuits above Atoll 19 in case the lair counterattacked, while fat army transporters brought anti-aircraft guns and detachments of Lord Commander Fyle's Archite Palatines, who spread through the atoll in their crimson tunics and silver breastplates. Wide-bodied Mechanicum loaders landed in screaming clouds of grit, disgorging silent, red-robed adepts, who hurried to study the blazing energy plumes that kept the atoll aloft. Massive earth-moving machines and teams of cutters and drillers rumbled onto the atoll, their sole purpose to level entire swathes of it before laying honeycomb sheets of metal to serve as runways for assault and supply craft. Atoll 19 would be the first of many bridgeheads established before the Emperor's children were finished with Laren. Serena had returned to her quarters, claiming tiredness, but Ostian had decided to remain on the observation deck to watch the planet below. The beauty of Laren was entrancing, and Serena's talk of the landscapes of alien worlds had kindled a desire in him he had not known existed. To stand on the surface of an alien world, beneath a strange sun, and feel the wind blown from far-off continents never before seen by man, would be an intoxicating thrill, and he longed, ached even, to see the surface of Laren. He tried to imagine the sweep of its horizon, a featureless curve of endless blue that swelled with enormous tides and clung to the surface of the world by the slenderest of margins. What manner of life might thrive in the depths of its oceans? What calamity had befallen its lost civilization that had seen it submerged beneath thousands of meters of dark water? As a native of Terra, a world whose oceans had long since boiled away in ancient wars or environmental catastrophes, Ostian found the idea of a world without land hard to picture.
"What are you looking at?" asked a voice at his ear.
Ostian hid his surprise and turned to see Bekwa Kinska standing behind him, her blue hair pulled tight in an elaborate weave on the top of her head that Ostian guessed must have taken many hours to achieve. She smiled at him with a predator's grin. Ostian guessed that her scarlet corset gown was supposed to be more casual than her recital dress, but the overall effect suggested that she had just stepped from one of the American ballrooms.
"Hello, Ms. Kinska," he said, as neutrally as he could.
"Oh, please call me Beck. All my dear friends do," said Bekwa, linking her arm through his and turning him back to face the thick glass of the observation deck.
The fragrance of her scent was overpowering, and the cloying aroma of apples caught in the back of his throat. The front of her dress was scandalously low, and Ostian found himself sweating as he felt his eyes drawn to the barely contained curve of her breasts. He looked up
and saw Bequa staring right at him, and a fierce heat built in his cheeks, as he knew she must have noticed exactly where he was looking.
I'm sorry, I was...
Hush, my dear, it's quite all right, soothed Bequa, with a playful grin that reassured him not at all. No harm in it, is there? We're all grown-ups. He fixed his gaze on the gently spinning world below, trying to keep his mind on the swirls of ocean and atmospheric storms, as she leaned close to him and said,
I must admit that I find the prospect of war quite stirring, don't you? Gets the blood pounding and sets the loins afire with the sheer maleness of it all. Don't you find that, Ostian?
I can't say I'd thought of it that way.
Nonsense, of course you have, scolded Bequa. You're not a man if the thought of war doesn't wake the animal within you. What kind of person doesn't feel the blood fill their extremities at the thought of such things? I'm not ashamed to admit that the thought of the thunder of guns and the crash of fighting gets me all hot and bothered, if you know what I mean.
I'm not sure I do, whispered Ostian, though he had a very good idea of exactly what she meant. Bequa playfully punched his arm with her free hand and said,
Don't be obtuse, Ostian. I shan't stand for it. You're a dreadful boy to tease me so.
Tease you? He said. I don't know.
You know exactly what I mean, said Bequa, releasing his arm and turning on her heel to face him. I want you. Right here. Right now.
What?
Oh, don't be so prudish. Have you no sense for the sensual? Haven't you heard my music?
Yes, but...
But nothing, Ostian, said Bequa, jabbing him in the chest with a long painted fingernail and pushing him back against the glass. The body is the soul's prison, unless all five senses are fully developed and open. Open your senses, and the windows to your soul fly open. I've always found that when sex involves all five senses, it is a quite mystical experience.
No, cried Ostian, squirming free of her grip. Bequa took a step towards him, but he backed away with his hands held out before him. His body palpitated at the thought of being Bequa Kinska's plaything, and he shook his head as she advanced towards him.
Oh, stop being such a silly boy, Ostian, she said. It's not as if I'm going to hurt you. Well, not unless you want me to.
No, it's not that, gasped Ostian. It's just...
Just what?
Asked Bequa, and he could see she was genuinely confused. Perhaps no one had ever refused her advances before, and he struggled to think of an answer to her question that wouldn't offend her. But his mind was as blank as the marble in his studio.
It's just that I have to go, he said, inwardly cringing at such a pathetic answer and hating the wretched, snivelling creature he was. I have to meet Serena. She and I have an appointment.
The painter woman. You and she are lovers?
No, said Ostian hurriedly. I mean, yes, we're very much in love.
Bequa pouted and folded her arms, her entire body telling him that he was now less than sump scum to her. He started to say something else, but she cut him off, saying,
No, you can go away now. I'm quite finished talking to you.
Not knowing what else to say, he meekly obeyed her and all but fled from the observation deck.